CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Dateline Washington, New York Times. Standing beside the French leader who has championed the need for dialogue with Moscow, President Biden said that he would talk to President Putin, but only in consultation with NATO allies and only if the Russian leader indicated he was, quote, looking for a way to end the war. I welcome Anatole Levin of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft, who's been looking for this dialogue as long as the war has been wearing out people's ability to imagine a future because of the conflict and because of the price of energy, because of worldwide inflation, even famine. Anatole, I'd like to believe that this is good news. Mr. Macron, with the president, have been discussing many major issues, but Ukraine drives everybody to distraction. Do you regard this as good news, or are we looking at gestures that are understandable and they'll come to nothing? What is your instinct? Good evening to you.
Hello, John. Well, I think it's slightly good news. I mean, any movement towards, a ceasefire in Ukraine is going to begin with small steps, and this is a very small step. Biden, saying that in principle he wants to talk to Putin. The real, and Russia in principle saying that, of course, on certain conditions, Russia is also looking for a peace settlement. The real question is whether Biden and NATO allies will stick to this line about, basically making peace conditional on agreement by the Ukrainians, or, as Macron said, would not impose any peace unacceptable to the Ukrainians. Now, the terms publicly set by the Ukrainians rule out peace because Russia can never agree to give up Crimea or hand back the eastern Donbass. So, I mean, Russia will have to make further concessions, but, I mean, if there is ever to be a peace settlement, then America will have to be prepared to overrule the Ukrainians on a couple of points.
The fact that Mr. Biden is making this remark with Macron, is that significant? Because Macron has been, sometimes I've been able to focus on his conversations with Moscow. Sometimes there have been reports about he's not talking to Moscow. Is he the most peacemaking of the European leaders?
Well, Macron has tried to present himself as somebody who can talk to Moscow. But Macron has never offered or proposed anything concrete that could bring about a peace settlement. And so I'm afraid in Moscow, at least, he has little credibility now, while at the same time his overtures to Moscow have also lost him a lot of credibility in Kiev. So I don't myself regard Macron as a particularly useful figure, I have to say.
And the European Commission, the European President, Ms. von der Leyen, in these last days, has made remarks consistent with a tribunal being investigated by the European Union, anticipating war crimes, alleged war crimes, to be prosecuted. Because the Hague, the ICC, does not apply to the conduct in Ukraine. They need a separate body, a tribunal. And Mr. Putin has mentioned in particular, that seems especially hawkish. So is the European Union on the we don't negotiate side, or is it a fence sitting? I can't tell when they're talking about a tribunal.
Well, the European Union suffers from multiple personality disorder. There are very hardline elements in Eastern Europe, in Sweden, and indeed in the Commission, and in West European countries as well. And there are considerably less hawkish elements. Von der Leyen is one of the hawks, but that doesn't mean that this is a united EU position. And of course, it must be said that the idea of a tribunal that would try Putin would in itself make any peace settlement completely impossible. You don't do that, to the government that you try to negotiate with.
Well, we're also
And of course, as well, it must be said, if one had applied this in not dissimilar circumstances to previous American actions, it would have brought the whole international system down in ruins. So there is a considerable measure of double standards about all this.
We're also looking at the debate been going on for weeks now about the oil price cap. This speaks to the general issue of sanctions and if those sanctions are regarded as effective in Europe, and if Europe is struggling with the onset of winter and is changing its mind. What is your measure of Berlin at this moment? Is it changing its mind about the prosecution of the war?
The government in Berlin has not changed its mind, though there are deep divisions within the government. But I mean, it will depend in the end, above all, on, you know, on the public, on the streets. If you see massive public protests against a continuation of the war and calling for a peace settlement, then, you know, amidst obviously mass suffering, then governments will have to listen. But we don't know yet just how bad the public suffering will be, partly because we don't know how bad the winter will be yet. And there are also major, you know, uncertainties about the depth of the economic recession that will result from the war.
Always a question about, will you fight to the last Ukrainian or will you fight to the last ability to pay your heating bill? Now to London, which is not part of the EU, but it's certainly a major part of NATO. And it's romantic of me, but I can't help myself, Anatole. The Telegraph published photographs from Passchendaele's Trenches, 1917, which is associated with the meat-grinding stalemate of the Great War and the futility of it all and the anger about the conduct of sovereign powers that followed the war, the despair of the Versailles Treaty, the punishment, all that bad history associated with Passchendaele, side by side with a photograph of the trenches at Donbass along the Dnieper River Valley. There were also a photograph of the destroyed forests of Belgium because of the heavy shells in Passchendaele and Verdun, and a photograph of the destroyed forest, trees cut in half, splinters, in Ukraine. I was reminded immediately of the word stalemate. Is that word going around in Europe now? Is there an understanding there will be no victory in this war?
Well, it was going around much more, it has to be said, in the summer. The thing is that since then, two major Ukrainian successes have led to a belief that perhaps a more complete Ukrainian victory is possible. But then that then leads, of course, to fears that this may lead to, you know, Russia to escalate towards the use of nuclear weapons. So at the moment, European public opinion and official position is in a, you know, a rather confused and a state almost of suspended animation, I would say, about the war, waiting to see what happens next. I mean, as far as the Passchendaele analogy is concerned, I mean, it would be a good idea if papers like the Daily Telegraph paid more attention to how you can prevent wars like this happening rather than, you know, making facile historical analogies between them.
Finally, the New York Times writes, with Mr. Biden showing more openness to a negotiated settlement and Mr. Macron more unequivocal support for the Ukrainian cause, the two leaders met each other halfway. Is there a dispute between the U.S. and members of NATO and the EU about backing Kyiv all the way? Do you hear talk like that?
Between parts of Washington and parts of the EU, I mean, neither side is fully united. Yeah. But the real divisions between the US and Europe are on economic matters. And there, of course, it's not just about Ukraine. It's also about the Inflation Reduction Act and its subsidies. And it's about American pressure to get the Europeans to join an economic war against China. And I think the risk for US-EU relations is that the three of these things will come together.
Yes.
In the context of a deep European economic recession, if this happens, which many Europeans will blame on the Americans, and that would lead to a real crisis in transatlantic relations. We're not there yet, but it is a possibility.
Anatole Lieven of the Quincy Institute. I'm John Batchelor.